Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Who Killed? I'm your host, Bill Huffman, and this is a Slow Burn Media Evergreen Podcast and Killer Podcast production.
From ABC 7 New York, this is Eyewitness News Extra Time.
A body has been found in Oak Beach, and police believe there may be other bodies out there.
Yeah, and Liz, this is the barrier island to the south of the town of Babylon, an extensive search that goes on for a good mile along the bay here south of the town of Babylon. You could see crime scene investigators there, and then, Tony, if you want to come back out, you could see behind me, and then clear up the beach right here. There are multiple outposts here where they're right now sifting through the sand and looking for human remains. We know right now that they can confirm in the last couple of days they have found two bodies. We believe skeletal remains, one on Saturday, one today, and we're told possibly more.
Right now, based on the common denominators, the similarities of the victims, where they were dumped, the dismemberment, it looks like one person. And the fact that Manorville remains that were found in 2000 and 2003 are now connected to remains found years later at off Ocean Parkway. And the two legs found off Davis Park in 96, which is 15 years ago, connected to remains found off Ocean Parkway. That leads to the theory that it's one person using this area as a dumping ground and dismembering the bodies so that the police could not identify them if they were found. When the Asian male was found, that was unusual. We thought that was, out of the ordinary, a male with all the females. But then he was wearing women's clothes. He was of slight build, possibly involved in the sex trade. That's the theory. Then the toddler, of course, was another issue that didn't fit the pattern. But the toddler, through DNA later, was connected to a female remains found 7 miles away, across the line into Nassau County. Is she involved in the sex business? Maybe. We're assuming that she was. And people in the business and people that have are very familiar with the prostitution business, tell us that, a sex worker will bring a youngster with them sometimes when they meet a client. This case is not cold. I don't like that term because it indicates that we've given up on it and that it's put in a file drawer someplace. Not true. The detectives in our forensics unit and the homicide squad are still working diligently on leads that we received after the last press conference. We do know that this person is organized, is methodical in what they do, rather than a disorganized killer. Again, there's all sorts of theories about what kind of person this killer is. And I tell people all the time that when we do catch the person, everybody will be surprised.
We have some breaking news. CBS News has confirmed police have a suspect in custody linked to New York's 2010 infamous Gilgo Beach murders. Authorities were reportedly on the scene earlier today at First Avenue and Massapequa Park. On December 11th, 2010, the first of what ended up being a total of 10 bodies was found. So we're going to have more information as we get it on this developing story.
Police department's homicide detectives, and he's been indicted in a grand jury presentation by the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office for the murders of Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. The investigation of Maureen Brainerd Barnes is ongoing. These young women went missing between July of 2007 and September of 2010. They were found in December of 2010 by the Suffolk County Police Department, And then there was nothing, absolutely nothing. For the next 13 years, their cases went unsolved until today. When I took office in January of 2022, I made Gilgo a priority. I made Gilgo a priority before I took office. I met with the victims' families, some of whom I'm proud to have standing with us today, and I told them that we were going to handle this case differently. We were going to do it differently, and that when I showed up, you weren't going to see me calling the media and being on Gilgo Beach with a giant magnifying lens looking for clues 12 years after the case. What I was going to do was I was going to work with my task force. We were going to form a task force. We were going to work with the Suffolk County Police Department. We were going to work with the Suffolk County Sheriff's Office. We were going to work with the New York State Police. We were going to work with our FBI. And we were going to form this task force, and we were going to work together, and we were going to use the grand jury, the power of the grand jury, to reach a determination in this case. Because the grand jury has two things. It has power, it has reach. You could obtain documents, you could interview witnesses. But the other thing that the grand jury has secrecy. No one knows what you do when you operate a grand jury proceeding. And we knew that when we were investigating this case and when we dealt with the media or whatever it was we were doing, we were playing before a party of one, because we knew the person responsible for these murders would be looking at us. So we were very careful how we handled the investigation. We maintained the integrity of the investigation. Most importantly of all, we maintained the secrecy of that investigation, and I think that's paid dividends as we've seen today. Now, I think that when we had the task force, the first thing we did got together with Suffolk County Police Commissioner Rodney Harrison, and we formed the task force. Our first meeting was February 1st of 2022. And what we did, what all of the agencies here, we made the commitment. We were going to take our talented, our most talented investigators. So in the district attorney's office, we took ADAs, myself included. We took analysts. We took detective investigators. And they worked on a daily basis with other talented investigators from all of the agencies here. We started that in February 1st in 2022. 6 weeks later, on March 14th, 2022, the name Rex Heuermann was first mentioned as a suspect in the Gilgo case. A New York State investigator was able to identify him in a database. And from that point on, we used the power of the grand jury, over 300 subpoenas and search warrants, looking into this individual's background to bring us to this day. So I'm proud. I know that this case is over, but I'm proud of what we've accomplished up to this point. I know we have more to accomplish, but I'm also thankful for the partnership of the task force, because certainly without the participation of the task force, we wouldn't be standing here. Before I thank some folks and turn it over to our partners, I just want to talk a little bit about the evidence in the case. I know a lot of people know about the case. As I indicated, the victims went missing between July of 2010 and July of 2007 and September of 2010. And in December of 2010, they were their bodies were recovered. They were buried in a similar fashion, in a similar location, in a similar way. All the women were petite. They all did the same thing for a living. They all advertised the same way. And there were immediately there were similarities with regard to the crime scenes. All the women were bound at the head, at the midsection, or at the chest, and later at the legs. The other thing I think that's been talked about in the media was they were bound by burlap. That has taken a life of its own in the media, and the burlap has been described or thought to be the burlap that's used at a nursery for. That's not the burlap that was used in this case. The burlap was camouflage burlap used for duck blinds of hunting. Obviously it was used to purposefully hide the bodies. One thing that became immediately apparent was at the time of each of the murders, the murderer, the defendant, Heurman, he got a cell phone and a burner phone, which is prepaid and anonymous. And for each of the murders, he got an individual burner phone, and he used that to communicate with the victims. Then shortly after the death of the victims, he then would get rid of the burner phone. Right away in December of 2012, FBI CAST analysts, special agents with the CAST unit of the FBI, they immediately began looking at that cell site data. They compared the victims' phones with the burner phones, and they immediately honed in on some similarities, specifically in the Massapequa Park area. And they looked at an area of a confluence of four cell towers, and they realized that this had significance because the perpetrator of these crimes was probably located within this area at or around the times of the murderer. And that was mapped out. That was called the box, and it was an area in Massapequa Park. The FBI also managed to do that for an area in Midtown Manhattan. So that was an investigative lead. The other investigative lead at the time was, even though there was a significant amount of time that elapsed with regard to before the victims were recovered, there was some significant evidence recovered. Specifically, there was a hair recovered from Maureen Brainerd Barnes from a belt buckle that was around her legs. With regard to Megan Waterman, there were three hairs recovered from her. From around her head area, one from around her leg area in the burlap, and then there was one caught in between the tape. That was recovered. Amber Costello also had a significant hair that was recovered during the time of the recovery. The crime scene, because it was out there for so long and because it was exposed to the elements, those hairs were degraded, so you couldn't use traditional DNA analysis on it. You would have to wait and use mitochondrial DNA. And back in 2010, the technology wasn't there for mitochondrial DNA. So the investigation proceeded, but also technology proceeded as well. In February of 2022, we formed the task force. We began working collectively. A mere 6 weeks later, on March 14th, 2022, Rex Heurman was identified for the first time. The manner in which that was done was the New York State investigator looked at a database. Amber Costello, the day before her disappearance on September 1st, 2010, she met with an individual for the purposes of having him pay her money for her services. She involved herself in a ruse where once the individual gave her money, and other individuals came into the house, pretended to be a significant others, confronted the individual with the purpose of making that individual uncomfortable, having him leave without retrieving his money, and that's exactly what happened. That individual was identified as a person who was between 6'4", 6'6", a large man, thickly built, not necessarily overly muscular, but just a naturally big person with glasses, white, and dark hair. Also of significance was that the fact that he was driving a dark-colored or black first-generation Chevrolet Avalanche with a very unique feature that was between the it's a pickup truck, so it was between the cab and the bed, and that was identified. Again, that was back in 2010. But it wasn't until March of 2022 that that database was searched by the task force, and this individual was identified. That individual was Rex Heuermann, the defendant, and right away there were some commonalities that came right to the fore. Rex Heuermann, 6'4", largely. A large person, not necessarily muscular, but a very physically large person. He has glasses. He has the dark hair, and also of particular note, he owned at the time that first generation Chevy Avalanche. But there was more. He lived at 105 First Avenue, which was located within that box area that the FBI first. Discovered in 2012, but there was more. Also, he worked at the time at an architect as an and he owned his own architectural firm at an address at 19 West 36th Street in Midtown Manhattan, and that was also the area of interest that was identified by the FBI in 2012. Again, that was March 14th, 2022, and from that point on. Our partners and my office, we used the grand jury to continue to investigate, and we executed over 300 subpoenas, search warrants pertaining to this individual to find out more information. One of the things that we did is we followed him because we wanted to get an abandonment sample of his DNA, which we were able to do. We also got DNA samples, abandonment samples from his family. And then we went back and we got mitochondrial DNA testing. And with regard to, there's an aspect of New York State law that doesn't allow me to talk about DNA testing, specifically at press conferences. It's so I can't do that. However, at the arraignment, and also when we filed our bail letter, we talked about the significance of that evidence. So if anyone needs to see that, but suffice to say, that evidence was significant, especially with regard to the other evidence that we had developed. But it was another interesting aspect. We looked at the Heuermann family travel records, and we learned that during the murders of the last three women, Bartholomew, Waterman, and Costello, that during the commission of those murders, the defendant's wife and children were out of New York State, and he was alone in the tri-state area. We also went back and looked at his cell site records, and we compared his personal cell site records with that of the four target phones, and we saw that there was areas of commonality. In other words, that whenever the target phones would bounce off a cell tower, if the Heuermann personal phone bounced off a tower, it was always consistent and in close proximity with the target phones. And at no time was there ever an instant where those target phones were, for instance, in New Jersey while the defendant was on Long Island. So that was completely consistent. The other thing that we looked at was we looked at his use of burner phones, and we followed, using the grand jury, using the great investigative help from our partners, we followed his use of burner phones. We were able to identify seven separate burner phones that he used. We were able to use fictitious or fraudulent email addresses and get Google warrants, and from there we got his searches. And we learned what the defendant was searching. In a 14-month period, He had over 200 searches pertaining to the Gilgo investigation. Not only was he looking at investigative insight, he was looking, trying to figure out how is the task force using cell phones to try to figure out what's happening. What are the developments with regard to the task force? And this, this really supported our decision to keep our investigative focus secret, because we knew that this one person would be watching, and we didn't want to give him any insight into what we were doing. And we also didn't want him to know just how close we were getting. So we maintained the grand jury secrecy, and we maintained the integrity of our investigation. In addition to those Gilgo searches, he was compulsively searching pictures of the victims, but not only pictures of the victims, pictures of their relatives, their sisters, their children, and he was trying to locate those individuals. In addition to that, there was a lot of torture, porn, and what you would consider, depictions of women being abused, being raped, and being killed. In addition to all of that, we continued to look, and we were able to determine that Chevy Avalanche that was used during the commission of the Amber Costello crime, that Chevy Avalanche was in South Carolina. And again, with the help of our partners, we were able to seize that Chevy Avalanche pursuant to a search warrant, and we're certainly going to analyze that. In addition to that, pursuant to the arrest of the defendant last night by the Suffolk County Police Department, we obtained one of his burner phones, his last burner phones. This case is not over, it's only beginning. We're continuing to execute search warrants, and we anticipate getting more evidence. Before I turn it over to my partners, I want to thank a lot of people in the room. First and foremost, I want to thank the victims in this case.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of Who Killed? If you do enjoy this episode or this show, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. I will be dropping new episodes of Who Killed every Friday, and if you'd like to stay up to date on the cases that I've covered as well as the new shows I have in the pipeline, please follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. Thank you guys so much again for listening, and until next time, be safe.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done. And that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.